MyMac Podcast number 112, sponsored by Small Dog Electronics and Innotech.com. Check out Small Dog at smalldog.com.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And like I said at the beginning, it is less than a week from Macworld. In fact, by the time a lot of people are listening to this, Macworld may have already begun. Or if it's Monday in the morning on the East Coast, both Guy Searle, hi Guy.
Hello, hello.
Will be on a plane trekking out to San Francisco. And others may be listening to it later that day and will actually be there and partaking in the fine cuisine of San Francisco.
All points converging.
Everybody else will probably listen to this on Friday or maybe over the weekend, and anxiously awaiting the Tuesday announcements of what is coming out of Apple at the Expo. I'm really looking forward to it this year. I'm quite excited.
Well, it's been what, 7 years since you've been there?
Yeah. 7 years since I've been to San Francisco, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm staying in a very crappy hotel. Last year, I stayed in a really nice hotel. Mm-hmm. Guy Searle and I keep saying Guy Searle. Like
Guy Searle. Mm-hmm.
Guy and I were talking on the phone yesterday, and were we talking on the, it was on the phone, but we also had iChat running, mm-hmm. and we were both Googling and doing the hybrid satellite and seeing how far our hotels are mm-hmm. away from each other compared to Moscone Center.
Yeah.
Guy is probably about two blocks closer.
Mm. Yeah, more
but you
or
know
less.
What? Yeah, but we've got some expensive equipment that we're going to be lugging around.
Yeah, yep. So are you guys both same side of town or opposite?
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
We're close to each other.
Yeah, we're probably about five blocks away from each other, and I'm about four blocks from the Moscone Center, and Tim's about, like, I think six or seven.
Right. Mm. So, I mean, it's
and
walkable.
No, we're not going to tell you what the hotel it is.
No. No groupies, please. We don't need the groupies. No, but I'm really looking excited. I'm excited. We talked about our predictions last year, mm-hmm. Or last week, I should say. And here's a question for you guys. Does Apple need another computer? I mean,
yes.
We have... let's look at the product lineup.
Well, Donnie thinks they do. I remember reading his post on that in the blog section. But
we have a cheap laptop and an expensive laptop.
Mm-hmm. Two expensive laptops.
Exactly, the 15 and the 17.
Yep.
We have the Mac Mini.
A cheap desktop.
Yep. A very expensive one.
The Mac Pro.
And they also have the server.
Mm-hmm.
So what's missing from that lineup?
Well, you
got
the iMacs, too. Don't forget that.
Exactly, the consumer
the 24-inch iMac. Oh.
Which is what Guy is playing on right now.
Yeah.
So what is missing from the lineup? A consumer level higher than the Mini with no monitor? An iMac monitorless computer?
Like a Mini Tower or a G4 Cube Reborn?
No, I don't think they need to bring the Cube back. I think Donnie about nailed it. They could really use a mid-level tower, you know, something with a little bit of expansion. I mean, all it really needs is along the lines of two PCIe-X slots and enough, you know, maybe four slots for RAM and enough room for two or three hard drives. It doesn't have to be a huge tower like the Mac Pros.
And something with an upgradable video card, is that what you're thinking, Guy?
Well, not necessarily, because, I mean, for what most people use Macs for, the video cards that Apple supplies, they're pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not like gaming is huge on the Mac and everybody's rushing out to get the latest and greatest NVIDIA card. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I disagree. I think Apple's got the desktop covered very well. Mm-hmm. I think what they could probably use is a 12-inch sub-notebook MacBook Pro. Something a little higher in price than the MacBook, but yet it's a subcompact. Sony Vaio, if you will.
Yeah.
Something small, something around the 3-pound range, and really aimed for the business person.
Well, you know,
they could run Windows, Mac, Linux, mm-hmm. whatever they want on it.
It's funny you say that. There was a story that I just heard about today that OWC and I'm not even sure if I can pronounce this properly, Axiatron,
okay,
are talking about, they've got something on their site that they're dubbing the mod book, which is supposed to be the first ever Mac tablet solution. Now, the thing that has me kind of wondering if this is BS, I'm looking at this through Dig. The title for it is Mac Tablet at Macworld, It's Not What You Think. And the last time I saw an article with that particular little
advertising
missive, it was for the Linksys iPhone. Yeah. Now I'm over here, and even better, it's on Engadget.
Well, now are they actually? Is this a press release from Otherworld Computing, i.e., MacSales.com?
Well, like I said, I'm looking at this through Engadget, and let's see what they're saying here. That OWC and Axiatron are stepping in to fill the void in what they dubbed the first modbook, the first ever Mac tablet computer solution.
I would have to say that from my experience dealing with Mac sales, they've been an advertiser in the past at MyMac.com and this podcast.
Yeah, they don't normally putting do that the aside, BS. They,
no, they're not known for announcing something and not following it through. Obviously, we don't have all the details of what this product is
right.
and what it's going to be. Right. We'll find out less than a week from today. But if Mac Sales is saying that they're going to do something, Otherworld Computing, I've got to put some stock into that.
Yeah, they've got whatever this is supposed to be underneath, you know, in the picture here, what looks like to be like a red silk cover.
Ooh. Well,
unveiling January 9th is what they're saying.
I see it, yeah.
So, I'm wondering what the big news from Apple is going to be. I'm just dying to know, and I'm sure most of our listeners are too. iTV, iPhone, I've heard now the iChat, what is it called? The iChat Mobile might be the name, which, it's kind of generic, but it sounds a little bit unoriginal, but then again. I think Motorola has the cool names.
iTalk's already taken, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Motorola has the coolest names for cell phones right now.
Yeah.
And the Razr, the Sliver, those are pretty cool.
Now, was that Sliver or Silver?
Silver. Sliver. No, it's Silver. Yeah.
Maybe they'll call it the Bitch Slap.
The Bitch Slap.
The baddest phone in the market. That's right. The Apple Bitch Slap.
So
you know when you're making a call.
I've got my one of my Visa cards with enough money that if the rumors pan out, I am buying an iPhone at the Apple Store,
or an
if
Apple
it's
phone.
Available, or an Apple phone, whatever, the day that it's available. And if that means as soon as the key, the
if
Steve
that means
note,
I have to rip it off of the kiosk.
That means when Steve is done with his little speech, if he says it's available now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jumping in a cab. Actually, the Apple Store is close enough that I could walk.
Or run. Since everybody else will be doing the same thing.
Yeah. I think it'll be pretty cool. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
He's going to mosh surf out of Moscone Center. Right. There's on only top of the crowd stamping into the Apple Store.
Get out of the way, people.
I must have the Bitch Slap.
I think that we're going to have Leopard.
Oh,
sooner
yeah.
than late. I think they're going to release it next week.
Well, and Donnie also posted that link about iWork 07.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you assume that's coming out.
Yeah, every year we have a new iLife and iWork suite. That's
you're talking about the Amazon page?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we know that that's going to be, and who didn't know that Apple's going to upgrade the entire iLife suite?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you guys looking for as far as upgrades to the programs in iLife?
You know, I was thinking about that in the car not 20 minutes ago, driving over here. And I thought, what do I really want with a new iLife suite? What's missing? I don't use iWeb, but I know that that needs major work to really make it
useful,
worthwhile,
useful
yeah.
for more.
I don't. Yeah. I don't. I have it. I don't use it at all.
Yeah.
Period. I've used it twice, and
just to play with it.
Yeah, and I went back to Adobe Go Live when I was done.
Mm-hmm.
So beyond that, there's really not a whole lot. iPhoto works great.
Mm-hmm.
iTunes works great. Yep. We'll see an upgrade. iTunes is upgraded. I know it's considered part of iLife, but it really is an independent application because. Because
you can't get the rest of the iLife suite onto a PC.
Well, not only that, but it's updated independently of the rest of the iSuite.
Yeah, that's true.
GarageBand I can't really imagine GarageBand doing anything more than what I use it for, which is this podcast.
Well, right? You know, one thing I would love to see in GarageBand would be the ability to select on individual tracks either like a Skype microphone or an iChat microphone with its own feed into GarageBand.
Without having to go through a mix board.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be something. That would be nice.
Now, that's something that you know, my horrible attempt at doing the podcast a couple weeks ago, I tried to do that with Ubercaster, and it just didn't work very well. But if anybody, Apple's got, you know, they got the hardware, they got the software, they should know how to do something like that.
iPhoto, I think, works well.
Yes, it does.
For what I use iPhoto for, it worked. You know, I still have yet to order one of the books, the photo books that you
can.
I keep wanting to. Did you order one?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
How did it come out?
It came out great. My mother-in-law's husband was very ill, and he passed away a couple months ago. But when we had spent some time out in Boise, Idaho, we had taken a bunch of pictures. So I went into iPhoto and I grabbed some of the better pictures from our adventures out there and, you know, put in a couple of simple titles and printed it up. It ended up being, I think, somewhere between 8 and 10 pages, and got out to him and he loved it, thought it was great.
We're actually talking to Guy via Skype, and this is the newer version of Skype, so it has the video capabilities. Unfortunately, we don't have a EyeSight camera hooked up here, so Guy can't see us, but we can see him. So I have to say, Guy, stop leaning over to your right because we like see half of your face. It's really
disconcerting. Sometimes half of my face could be better than none.
For those who are going to the expo,
oh, and thanks for dressing, Guy. I appreciate that too.
Definitely. Nice shirt.
Yeah, it's brown.
That's the thing about, you know, publishing on the internet. You can almost look anyway, and no one's ever going to know. So for those who are going to the expo, drop us a line. Let us know you're going to be there. We would love to meet as many people as we can. Mm-hmm. We're going to be quite busy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to have a lot of staff members out there, and we've got a lot of big plans.
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. I talked to Artie for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And he's a really smart, fun guy. I really like talking to him. Mm-hmm. He's going to be at the expo. This is going to be his first expo covering it as a journalist. Mm-hmm. He's brand new to the Mac platform, right. So I'm really looking forward to hearing his point of view.
His perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, someone that's new to the Mac platform, but not new to the computers, mm-hmm. what he thinks about some of these. So we're going to get him on the podcast and possibly the video mm-hmm. podcasts as much as we possibly can. I'm really looking forward to it. And I was talking to him, and I said, you know, probably the big difference between us and other Mac sites, because he kind of was, well, what's the real difference between mm-hmm. mymac.com and, you know, all these other Mac sites? And I said, honestly, it comes down to we don't do news, number one. You're mm-hmm. not going to come to mymac.com
for
five
the
or six times
news.
A day,
because right.
you're not going to find it. All of our content is 100% original.
Mm-hmm.
It's not taken from any other source. It's, you know, it's at mymac.com, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But while we are a serious site, we don't take ourselves too seriously. And there's a distinction there. I mean, when we publish something, we stand behind it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't
except for my yearly Chris Hanna Kwanzmas.
But we don't take ourselves too seriously. We know how to have fun. Yes. And we're going to do. We're going to bring that kind of an attitude to the expo, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So, we do have some feedback for the podcast, so let me play those, and we'll comment on it.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Ivan Marshall calling from Southfield, Michigan. Happy holidays to you. I just wanted to comment on one of the things I heard on a recent podcast concerning running Tiger on older G3 machines and whether you could successfully run it or not. I happen to have a Pismo PowerBook, one of the last ones before they went to the titanium PowerBooks, and it's a 400 megahertz model. I'm soon to upgrade to a G4 chip. But anyway, it successfully runs Tiger. I have Tiger on it, and it's running well. And it's a lot of G3s. As long as you have FireWire and a DVD drive, you can install it. People even install Tiger with hooking their machines up, target disk mode to another machine with a DVD drive and installing it that way. But on Otherworld Computing's website, they have access to a link to a software program called Ex Post Facto, so that if you have a G3 machine, it helps smooth the transition to allow you to run Tiger. Now, I do agree that Panther ran faster because there's not as many demands on your graphics card, and the graphics card is not changeable in the Pismo PowerBook. It's an 8-megabyte ATI graphics card integrated, but only 8 megabytes. And I can play DVDs and streaming video from the internet. I don't really play games much, so that's fine for me. But you can run Tiger. I have Tiger on that machine, and it runs very well. It's just that if I try to play games, I would fall down there because the graphics card is a weak link. But as far as being able to run Tiger and enjoying Spotlight and all those other things that come along with Tiger, it runs well. It's just that Panther ran a little faster. I have 768 gigabytes of RAM in it, and it runs well. It's not as fast as a G4 machine would be if I had a G4 chip in it, but you can run it. And for people who have beige G3s or other G3 towers, blue and white towers, if you're having any problems running Tiger or running Panther, go to Ex Post Facto or do a search for it, or go to Otherworld Computing's website, and they have a link to the gentleman that wrote the software program, and it's free. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Enjoy your program all year long, and looking forward to the new stuff coming from Macworld Expo. Take care.
And thank you very much, Ivan. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, it's great to hear from him again. Yeah.
I've got the Lombard PowerBook, so it's the model right before his, mm-hmm. and that's 400 megahertz as well, but it does not have FireWire, so.
And that could be a problem.
You know, it's still, I will still say, that was the most comfortable computer to type on.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. I know I've said that before in the past, but mm-hmm. the, just the curve of it, and my hands felt really good. I like the keys on my MacBook Pro the best, as far as the actual tactile when I'm typing. In fact, I think I'm actually getting a little faster on the MacBook Pro now, typing, than, my Apple desktop keyboard, I'm still probably the fastest on that. Especially when it comes to numbers. I love the number pad. I have to have a number pad if I'm doing I cannot type numbers accurately using the rows. I just can't do it. But so there you go. Using an older G4 Macintosh, so G3 with Tiger, it does work.
Yep.
I wouldn't count on that working with Leopard.
Probably not.
I think that.
We don't really know yet.
Well,
but
I think that it's end of life for pre G4 computers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would go so far as to say that it's almost end of life for G4 computers.
Yeah, and I think obviously there's features on Leopard that were not shown and were only not even really hinted at. They just said there was more, but they couldn't show us.
Exactly.
So we have no idea what kind of demands those features might have on your system.
Speaking of a G4 laptop, as anybody listening to this podcast knows, I am a video gamer as well.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I'm not a Mac video gamer because, it's kind of an oxymoron there.
Yeah.
Well,
when you got an Xbox 360, why?
Yeah. Well, I've got the Wii as well.
Right.
And I love the Wii. Mm-hmm. The Wii rocks. Wii rock. But what if everybody has that? WIIROCK.com. Wii rock.
Tell you in a minute.
It's probably up.
Guy's going to try it real quick.
Hold on.
If it's not, let me know. I'll go register it. But I really want a PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's something that...
not there.
No, nobody owns it, huh?
Yeah.
We rock.
GoDaddy.com. Or
GoDaddy.com. Actually, I actually do own another domain. I was thinking about starting up a blog, which would do nothing but talk about whatever is new on Xbox Live. And it's called What's New on Live. I own that domain. If you go there right now, it actually auto-forwards to mymac.com.
Hmm.
But, and I haven't had it for very long, but it's something that I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about finding someone who has an Xbox, who's a pretty good writer, and would be willing to write that site, and then we'll split whatever advertising revenue we could come up with for the site. So, you know, there's an idea for someone out there.
Yep.
But anyways, back to my my PlayStation 3 and what that has to do with a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a very, very nice 1 gigahertz PowerBook G4 with, I believe, 1.25 gigabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
It's running the latest and greatest Mac OS, 10.4.9?
Yeah.
10.4.9. It's got a lot of software on it. I'm not going to say which. I am thinking about selling that, not on eBay, but selling it so I can buy a PS3.
Yeah.
Because this is a laptop that's really just sitting there not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic laptop. I mean, it works perfectly. If you remember right, or you remember back when I got the MacBook Pro, I actually considered getting rid of the MacBook Pro and keeping the PowerBook G4 because I just didn't see that big of an improvement.
Right.
And honestly, I still don't see that much of it. It's faster, the MacBook Pro, no question. But I don't do video work on the MacBook Pro.
Right.
I will at this expo, but for the most part, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But even if I did, the PowerBook G4 handled it just fine.
Yep.
So I've got this, I don't want to say new, but it's in really, really nice shape. I'm thinking about selling that for $500 or $600, which I'll turn around and just get a
PS3.
PlayStation PS3. 3.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there has $500 burning a hole in their pocket.
And you're going to be at the expo next week.
No, it doesn't have to be at the expo. But you would be interested in buying a G4 laptop with a lot of software on it.
Yep.
Let me
know. Maybe they'd be interested in a 933 Quicksilver Tower that I have burning a hole in my office right now.
So, but I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to sell the PowerBook.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely worth $500, no question. And that would be my PS3, because honestly, I want a PS3 more than I want that laptop that's sitting there.
That's the 15-inch, right?
Yes, it's a 15-inch PowerBook G4. It looks just like the MacBook Pro, really. I mean, they really haven't changed the look of the PowerBooks in a long time. Okay, so that was one of our feedback. And here's another one. Here's somebody that Guy knows.
Ooh. Hi, this is Dan Rodriguez from Adrian, Michigan. I've got a little story for you. I was recently at a Best Buy looking at a Zune. And one thing that really struck me was the color, the brown one. You gotta love it. Here I was checking it out. And I was being sarcastic looking at it. I was with a friend of mine, and we were looking at the Zune. And I got to be honest with you, the display looked really good. Other than that, not much else really impressed me. But I was looking at it being sarcastic, and I was saying, dude, oh man, it's the Zune, dude, it's the Zune. Dude, I want one so bad, man. Just being funny, sarcastic. And there was a woman standing next to me checking it out. She was a real prospect. And then there was a Best Buy employee that looked really kind of annoyed at my smartassness, if you will, or my sarcasm, excuse the language. And the Best Buy employee came up to the woman, kind of talking directly to me, saying, oh, you know, I'll never give Apple my money. Said, you know, I've got one of these, and this is 10 times better than an iPod. And now this, you know, I've got an iPod, and that was the last iPod I'll ever buy. This is 10 times better. And the woman was like, oh, wow, really? Said, yeah, I mean, it's got the Wi-Fi. I can transfer my music wirelessly. It's got an FM tuner. I mean, this beats the iPod hands down. And I'm thinking, wow, that was me 6 years ago when I first switched to the Mac. And I was, you know, the evangelist telling people, hey, I'll never go back to a PC. I'll never give Microsoft my money again. you know, and it's so funny that not so long ago, you know, I was really preaching that, and to see it reversed was actually kind of funny. So I just had to share that with you guys. Love your show. But before I let you go, I do want to give my Macworld 2007 predictions. Here we go. I'll keep it short. I think that there will be an iPhone device announced. No questions about it. The other thing is the iPod. I believe the iPod will have a new form factor. And to what extent, I don't know. I don't know if it's the full video iPod, but there will definitely be a change. I'll be highly surprised if there isn't. And then the other thing that I think that they're going to announce is ITV. And the last thing that I believe, Leopard is going to have a new look and feel. At least I'm hoping that it will. So this is it. I'll wrap it up. This is Dan Rodriguez with Adrian, Michigan. Love your show. Bye.
Thanks very much, Dan. You know, Guy, we still owe Dan a lunch.
Yeah, at least. he bought for everybody.
He bought for everybody at our 100th podcast at the Mac Grand Store, Apple Company. Store. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the name of that restaurant?
Grand Rapids Brewing Company.
Yes, yes. It wasn't
pretty
bad.
Good food.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't too bad. So that's his predictions. Great Zune story. You know, the funny thing is, why a Best Buy employee would slam the iPod in favor of the Zune when I bet all you'd have to do is see how much money Best Buy makes with a sale to iPod users compared to sales to Zune users.
Unless there's some sort of secret Best Buy incentive program.
You know, I'm still a little upset. And Leo Laporte talks about this occasionally, and I have to agree with Leo in that I am upset that Microsoft went ahead and gave, who was it, Universal Music?
Yeah, Universal Music.
Money for every Zune sold.
Yep, $1.
In essence, saying people are going to steal your music, you should be reimbursed for that, so anytime someone buys our device, we're just going to give you money.
Well, you know what it was. It was a bribe.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Absolutely it was. It was to smooth over negotiations so they can get that music
right,
in the Zune store.
Universal Music content for the Zune marketplace.
Yeah. I don't think some people have speculated that they did it to sour negotiations between Universal and the other music companies with Apple for the iPod, but I don't see that happening.
No. Nope.
iTunes, they're making way too much money off of iTunes sales at this point.
To stab really them in the back like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's an admission on Microsoft's part that we're all thieves. And I regret that. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it
But wouldn't Microsoft actually have to have a product worth stealing first?
Yeah, well. But no, it's the what we're putting on our Zunes that we're stealing.
Okay.
We're downloading illegal music. And it just pisses me off that, you know, I just think that's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's one reason I won't support the Zune.
Mm.
Well, other than the fact that it also won't play with Macs.
No, and it doesn't work with the iTunes Music Store. I'm sorry, I've got a lot of money invested in stuff from the iTunes Music Store.
Ditto.
I don't know about you guys. I am buying some television shows now. I never watch it on the iPod, though. I always watch it on my computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Battlestar Galactica, Heroes.
Yeah. There's just a lot of stuff out there that I really am starting to rely on the iTunes Music Store. I'll give you a prime example. I missed an episode of My Name is Earl.
Mm-hmm.
I can't miss Earl. I love that show.
Right.
My name is Earl, too, so, of course, I have to watch that show, and I missed the season finale.
Would that be mm-hmm. My Name is Earl Squared?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, man, I hope they're going to reshow this sometime soon. Of course, they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, ooh. So I jumped on iTunes, downloaded it. There it is.
Yep.
It cost me $2. And it was worth $2 for me just to watch my show. I really mm-hmm. wanted to see it. Last thing I want to talk about before we wrap it up here, because we still have David Cohen's Fenestration coming up, and a interview that Nemo did,
mm-hmm.
as well as, and I haven't listened to, Robert Hasselberg's. I just like irritating him
poor,
that way.
Poor Bobbert. I mean, Robert.
We have a review for him coming up as well. So, but no, one of the things that I want to start doing, and I want to ask you guys if you fall into this category too, is better organization on my Mac. I have got crap all over the place. I don't put my movies in the movie folder that Apple provides.
Right.
I don't put my documents in the documents folder. At any given time, if you look at any of the Macs that I use on a daily basis, which is really two machines, the MacBook Pro and the G5, I have crap all over my desktop
mm-hmm.
that I never seem to move to where it should go. What I really need to do is get better organized. I need to create some folders and put things where they belong. You know,
mm-hmm. kind of like smart folders.
Well, yeah, but it's not even that smart. I mean, it would be smart if I did it, but I just don't. For instance, I'll find a web page that I want to come back to, but I don't necessarily want to bookmark it because mm-hmm. I know I'm not going to go back to it often. I just want to check it out later.
Yeah.
So I'll just drop
it on the desktop.
Onto the desktop, yeah. Wouldn't it make more sense if I could drag that to my desktop and it automatically goes into a bookmark folder?
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice.
I think you can set that up with Automator.
Probably. And that's the thing.
Or AppleScript.
That's the thing. I need to get better organized. You know, I've got a lot of MyMac.com business-related documents. Doesn't make any sense to have those mixed in with, you know, my video business.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense at all to have those mixed in with various bookmarks that I want to go back and check out.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple video projects that I happen to be working on in iMovie. Or. You see
right.
what I mean?
Right.
I need to get better organized.
Well, let's put it out to the listeners.
Yeah. Is there a really good organization tool that will help me do that? Because I'm fairly incompetent when it comes to... You know what else I want to do? I really need to start syncing the data between my
various
G5.
Macs, yeah.
And so, you know, whatever machine I happen to be on, it's just like the other machine, especially mm-hmm. email. All my email right now, I could check my email on my MacBook Pro, but I don't have mail set up on that machine.
Right.
If I check it on the MacBook Pro, I check it through the internet,
mm-hmm.
a web page.
Which is what I do.
Yeah. Right. But when I get home and I launch my email, it downloads everything that I already read earlier in the day.
Right.
So then I have kind of a permanent record of all my email.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Guy.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't mail do that as well? Because I know I've got mine synced up, and I'll read a couple of emails, and if I go and open up mail on another machine, those same emails are there and shown as being unread.
STMP?
I don't know. I've got like 4 or 5 different emails that it all downloads at once.
Yeah. I don't know. That's something else that I really need to get into is better syncing the two machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to figure out what application is going to be best for that. I wish Apple provided, call it a unified user that you can set up on any machine.
Mm-hmm.
with a special password and put in the IP address or the MAC address of the machine that you want it to sync to. And anytime you boot up one of those machines, it syncs it with a server. And then when you boot up the other machine, it syncs it with that machine.
You know,
it can't be .Mac because .Mac sucks.
You were asking earlier about what's kind of still missing as far as software or hardware goes.
There you go.
How about a NAS from Apple? That you just plug into one of your Ethernet ports on your router, and it's always there.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That might work.
Because the NASs that are out right now, I mean, as far as Mac support goes, it's you know, there's nothing there.
You want to explain what it is to people listening going, what the hell is he talking about?
Okay, a NAS is a network-attached server, and what it basically is, it's like a little tiny computer. Typically, they have like Linux or something, you know, some small distro of Linux installed on them. And it'll have anywhere from 1 to 4 hard drives. And instead of connecting up through your network through, you know, FireWire or USB or whatever, this machine itself plugs into one of the Ethernet ports that's on your router. And
so you'd want to call it probably networked storage.
Yeah. Well, network attached storage. That's why it's an ass. So what this
allows... What'd you call me? Oh, sorry.
No, Tim, I'll tell you that on Monday.
That's why they call it a NAS, you ass.
It's a nasty ass. But it's a great idea, but the Mac support just isn't there. And from what I've been reading online from some of the various sites that sell them, is that people generally are mostly unhappy with them. And I think it's part of the problem is that it's not simple. It's not Apple simple. And Apple could come out with something like this for, you know, the small business user or just a home user that's got a couple different, two or three machines on there. Plus this would also tie in with the ITV or whatever else they're going to eventually call it. And instead of having, you know, a small 2.5-inch 40 gig hard drive in the ITV that's going to be, you know, jack up the price, you've got something like this that's storing all of your content.
And it could also act as a unified area for syncing all your user data between various Macs.
Yes.
So as soon as you get within range of your NAS, boom, it syncs it. So whatever the most current one is, you know, it just compares the two and
well, even better,
any differences.
Yeah, you know, we're going to be in San Francisco. And if you had something like this, the moment you got online, wherever the hell it is that you are, with your Mac in some remote location, it could automatically sync up with your NAS back at your network.
Exactly. It'd be fantastic. And that's something, you know, because we are living in a truly wireless age at this point, where it really shouldn't matter where you are as far as having access to your data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a high-speed internet connection at home. Why can't I use, no matter where I'm at, why can't I use that computer, you know, as a remote terminal type of, you know. So I think that's a great idea, Guy. Will it happen? I don't think so. I don't think Apple's even thinking about that yet.
Well, you know, the answer might surprise you. They're coming out with the ITV, and so far the only thing anybody really knows about it is that it's going to be kind of, you know, a video airport express, and that's all anybody really knows. But they could do something more along this type of line, especially if it's only, you know, one drive or two drives, just a simple Ethernet connection, and it's a lot of storage wherever the hell you are in the world.
We got David Cohen coming up, like I said. Guy Searle and I will be at the Macworld Expo. So we'll,
Nemo will be there. Along with an entourage of my Mac writers.
Yeah, we're all going to be there. Not all. Some of us, Chad, will be here at home base checking things out. Make sure you visit mymac.com at least once a day. Next week.
Yep.
Because we're going to have a lot of content. No parties for poor Tim. When the showroom closes, I will be in a hotel room editing audio, video, text, pictures, getting them posted online.
I'm trying to keep me out of the strip clubs.
That's right. Because, you know.
Trying. Because I'm all about the strip clubs.
But I'm not going to.
Yeah.
So that's our segment. Here comes David.
Hello, my name is David Cohen and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world.
Now, welcome back to the show.
Well, this is the first Fenestration for 2007. I hope you had a quiet and restful holiday period. There have been quite a few developments in Windows-related Macintosh software since I last spoke to you, so let me spend a few minutes bringing you up to speed. Firstly, VMware released its long-awaited public beta of its Fusion software. This was announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference all the way back in the summer. It's been in private beta for a couple of months now, but just before Christmas, VMware released the beta to the public. Now, I've had a very quick look at it myself, but not really had enough time to actually comment on it directly to you yet. But word from the web is that it's a pretty solid beta at this stage, though not particularly feature-rich. VMware is a very corporate company. They're very big in corporate spaces, and the beta software reflects that. The feature set broadly matches what there's available on the Windows side. Quite a wide range of Unix, Linux and Windows server and desktop systems are supported as images. You can use pre-existing VMware images directly in the product without having to create new ones. And you can drag and drop data between Windows sessions in VMware and the OS X desktop just by pulling the application or the icon directly out of the VMware window. It's not currently as feature-rich as Parallels is, and it's also not as quick as Parallels is at the moment, though it is worth bearing in mind this is a beta product. Comments on Fusion have been polarised fairly much in the community. People who are comfortable with Parallels and aren't really familiar with VMware aren't all that impressed. People who are very familiar with VMware think that it's a good step forward towards getting VMware onto the Macintosh platform and tend to be less impressed with Parallels. Obviously, this is a beta, and in terms of features and performance, I'm sure that the VMware team working on this software will continue to develop it based on the comments and feedback that people get. And also, I would expect them to keep a beady eye on what Parallels are up to. In other developments, Codeweavers, who are developing the crossover Wine emulation product for the Intel Macintosh, have released a release candidate of their software. This is currently at version 6, release candidate 2, and you'll remember from previous podcasts that the Codeweavers crossover product allows you to run Windows applications natively in the OS X interface by recreating the Windows APIs within OS X. Now, they've had to recreate those APIs. They don't have access to Microsoft Code, which means in previous versions of Crossover, when I last looked at the betas, performance was not that good, and compatibility is limited to applications that Codeweavers specifically have coded for. This makes the Crossover product a good solution if you need occasional access to particular Windows programs, but not so good if you're looking for general Windows compatibility. Now again, because of the Christmas period, I've not had a chance to look at this software in any sort of detail yet, so I won't really comment on its performance until I've had a chance to have a decent look at the product. Once I've done that, I'll devote a particular fenestration to Codeweavers software. Now, a couple of fenestrations ago, I mentioned that Parallels have also not been idle, and had released a beta product updating the Parallels software with quite a lot of extra new features. Particular highlights were the ability to run Windows directly from the bootcamp partition, and also their new coherence mode, which aims to integrate the Windows applications you run under Parallels more tightly into the OS X interface by removing the Windows desktop and allowing the applications to appear as if they're part of OS X. Well, amazingly enough, despite the holidays, Parallels have managed to issue 2 further beta updates to this software. As you might imagine, they've responded to some of the negative issues encountered with the first beta and have tried to fix them, and they really are doing quite a good job. One of the issues with the first beta was problems with the bootcamp integration. With the latest beta Parallels version, Parallels claim they have resolved the issue with Windows activation that was occurring with this. The issue being that when you booted into bootcamp and then tried to run Parallels from bootcamp, each time you switch from one to the other mode, Windows would detect that the hardware being presented to it had changed and would look for a Windows activation. Obviously, this was a pain if you were switching back and forth. Parallels believe they've resolved this now, and that you will be able to run Parallels from the bootcamp partition within your OS X environment without requiring activation, and if you should then reboot the machine and go back to the native bootcamp environment, again, activation should not be required. Further refinements to the USB 2 support that was brought in with this version of the beta have been added to the software, and the software should now be far more compatible with various USB 2 devices that were problematical before. The Parallels team have also done quite a lot of work on the coherence mode, and it now integrates even further into OS X than it did before. They've cleaned up the windows so you really can't see any evidence of the Windows desktop behind the application windows that you'll have in your OS X desktop. This improves the appearance of the windows and makes it more apparent that the windows are actually part of the OS X environment rather than running on top of a Windows session underneath. Windows applications now appear in the dock when you run them, and they can be retained in the dock permanently or left on the desktop as aliases, just the same way as any other OS X application. This means you can boot up your Mac go to the OS X environment and double-click on an icon, say for Microsoft Word, running under Windows, and the Parallels Windows session will start in the background without being visible to you, and then Word will be loaded straight away. This really does make Coherence a completely seamless experience. There's no need whatsoever to have to go into the Windows desktop and access applications from within there. The Parallels icon in the dock remains as a master icon, effectively giving you application access. You can right-click on it in the dock, and you can then bring up the Start menu, and the Windows Start menu will appear on your OS X desktop to allow you to select new applications. You can also set applications as favorites, so they can be accessed from a right-click menu available from the Parallels dock icon. These applications running under Windows, made available in Coherence mode, can be alt-tabbed just the same as if they're an OS X application, and they can also be accessed quite easily using Expose. As such, Coherence now delivers a very, very tightly integrated application environment for Windows applications under OS X, and delivers the sort of user experience that CodeWeavers are trying to achieve with their crossover Mac product. Something else that's bundled in with this beta is a product that Parallels are currently calling Transporter. Now, what this is designed is to help ease the migration into Parallels from other environments. As such, Parallels can take a VMware image, a virtual PC image, and it can convert it so it will run natively under Parallels without any extra work. Now, this will only work for Windows images. It doesn't currently support Linux or Unix partitions, but even so, most people running Parallels are interested in running Windows, so this is a good way for Parallels to be going. Even more impressive than the ability to convert VMware or virtual PC images is the fact that there is agent software included with Transporter. You can take this agent and you can run it on an actual physical Windows PC, and it will effectively take the Windows partition that's running on that Windows PC, package it up, convert it for Parallels, and then save it out to an external drive. You can then load this virtual hard disk directly into a Parallels session, and without any extra configuration, you'll be running your Windows desktop within Parallels. This feature is going to be great for switchers or for anybody who needs to support or take an existing Windows partition and run it under Parallels. Now, my experience with these betas is that if you follow the instructions provided by Parallels when you actually load them up and run them, you can migrate from earlier Parallels versions to these betas without any problem. And my versions have been pretty stable. I've only had the odd crash with the earlier betas. Certainly the current beta, which is beta 3 build 3106, is certainly completely stable on my machine, and I'm using it as my main work environment when I'm at work. I run this environment under Coherence all day, every day. I can have my custom Lotus Notes email client with specific software additions that my company's created for me open on my OS X desktop, and if I double-click a Word file or an Excel file from within my email, it fires straight up into Office 2007, and the whole thing just looks like it's running under OS X. Which means I have access to all my customized environments and desktop behind, just the same as if they're an OS X program. We really do have a David and Goliath situation developing with the virtualization on the Macintosh now. On the one hand, you have VMware, who have a lot of experience and have been doing this for a long time, but are a very big and corporate company. And on the other hand, you have Parallels, who, before they launched on the Macintosh, nobody had really heard of them, but they're aggressively pushing out features, updates, and stable code on a regular basis. I am hoping on future fenestrations to actually be able to get representatives from both companies to actually come in and do an interview with me, so we can understand exactly what their take and their approach to the market is going forward. Finally, on the last fenestration, I was discussing the situation with Office 2007 and its new file formats. The Macintosh converters for these file formats are not going to be with us for a few months yet, and I commented on Microsoft's commitment and possible future directions for Office with this in mind. Well, as you might expect, the Macintosh community has stepped into the breach, and there are already several third-party solutions for converting Office 2007 files into files that can be read by Macintosh current version of Office. I'll do some evaluation on these this week and comment on them on the next fenestration, as well as obviously responding to whatever comes out of Macworld Expo next week.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in, and be sure to subscribe.
That's going to do it for this session.
As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year. This is Robert Hazelrig with another Speed E-Review. So, I'm sure you're all excited with anticipation of the upcoming San Francisco Macworld Expo 2007. I don't know about you, but I've cleared a space in my home entertainment theater for whatever Apple is about to announce with its Apple iTV. I've tried to think of absolutely everything that I could possibly need to connect the device to my television and get it up and running as quick as possible. And one of those things that I thought about is a new universal remote control. The last thing I want to do is add another device to my television set and have one more remote control laying around. I've got a VCR, I've got a DVD player, I've got a cable remote, and I've got a television remote, not to mention the home theater surround sound system remote control for the receiver. Okay, so I've used a bunch of universal remotes, and I have not been happy with many of them. However, from Logitech, there is a lineup of remotes called the Harmonies. What makes the Harmony so much better than the other remote controls is it actually plugs into your Macintosh. Yes, you've heard me right. It works with Macs. You plug it in via USB, you connect to the internet, and you plug in the information for each of the devices that you want to configure on the universal remote. Simply put, just go to each one of the devices that you want to control with the remote control, write down the make, the model. You don't need the serial number. Just the make and model number, and put it all down on a piece of paper so you'll remember it when you go onto the website. Plug in this information to the website and simply synchronize the remote control with the website, and bang, you are done. And it is almost that easy, almost, because I did have a little bit of configuration to do afterwards. But after my third try of synchronizing the remote, it seemed to function perfectly. One of the things I really like about the remote is it has this functionality called activities. And when you hit an activity button, it automatically turns everything on and off the way you need it to. So, for instance, let's say you're watching TV, right? The TV's on, the cable box is on, and maybe the sound system's on. Maybe the sound system's off. Let's say off in this case. Well, you want to watch a DVD. If you hit activities and then press watch a DVD, what it'll do is it will shut off the cable box, turn the TV to the proper input for the DVD device. Also, if you want it to, it can turn on your sound system, and bang, you're done. It's a two-button thing, and it manages the entire system. Very nice. Will it work with Apple's new iTV? Well, I spoke with a rep at Logitech, and they absolutely assured me that it will. Because all the programming and information is stored on a website and then loaded down to your remote control, all I have to do right now is wait for them to update their database, so when the Apple iTV becomes available, I can download and install their preferences onto my remote control. Harmony remote controls range in price, and they start at about $85. So they're not very inexpensive, but they are very handy. That's it for me this week. As always, this has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
A pair of talented author photographers has teamed up with a new publisher called Rocky Nook, and the result is an exceptionally helpful book called Fine Art Printing for Photographers. This is not your everyday book on digital printing. The authors are Uwe Steinmuller and Jürgen Gulbens, and you are about to hear my interview on the MyMac.com mini podcast, Book Bites Live. Well, we'd like to welcome you to our MyMac.com Book Bites Live interview, and the book that we are discussing is Fine Art Printing for Photographers. But first, we need to know the correct pronunciation of your name, please, and your co-author's name.
My name is pronounced Uwe Steinmüller, and my co-author's name is pronounced Jürgen Gulbens. Uwe is hard for Americans to pronounce, especially if they see the W. if they would think of a V instead, they have a little bit easier life to get closer.
So I'll just say Uwe and Jürgen. Is that good enough for now?
That's good enough for now.
Well, did Uwe and Jürgen, did the two of you compose different parts of this outstanding book, Fine Art Printing for Photographers, or did you work together throughout the entire process?
In some way, both. Jürgen did more of the research-intensive part, which means more the theoretical part, and I concentrated on the practical part of it, which is all based on our own photographic artwork.
And should most serious amateur or prosumer people use the same brand of printers, inks, and papers? You talk about that at great length in your book.
There's no absolute need to get all three parts from one manufacturer. Using different inks can be very successful, but is also calling for trouble. We avoid it personally entirely. Life is just too short. Using third-party papers is way less a problem, and actually the norm. Still, ink-paper-printer interaction can be very complex.
But how long and difficult is it to establish a reliable, consistent color management set of profiles for your Photoshop software and your printer when you're starting from scratch? Because that's obviously the key to success.
That very much depends what you are looking for. If correct color is essential, then it is quite complicated. Actually, correct color are mostly needed for product shots and art reproduction. For all other purposes, you likely want pleasing color. Although many people call colors they like correct, so they think it's the same, correct and pleasing. They always say, oh, this pleases me, it is correct, which is quite a different thing. We are not that strict because we only care if the end result is pleasing to us and hopefully other people or buyers.
Okay, well, that's a good point. And you and I have had some email exchange about the durability of the inks and the papers from different brands in addition to the actual brand of printer. So the big question is, for fine art printing, what briefly are the strengths and weaknesses of Canon, Epson, and HP, Uwe?
Yeah, this is very hard to tell. Last year, it wasn't so easy. Epson was the only game in town for archival pigment printing. This has changed dramatically. Actually, in the last 6 months, if you want. With all three brands, you can get today excellent results with gallery quality and longevity. To make a personal decision, you have to look at many parameters. Size, the width of the printer, the price, volume and frequency you print, because some printers don't want to sit around and be idle and then they can clog.
Yeah, like Epson is famous for that.
Yes, ink consumption, ink waste, rolled or not rolled papers, matte or glossy media. I think right now Epson is getting under pressure from Canon and HP. But we have also to say that Epson pushed the envelope for archival pigment printing to quite a high standard. Also to consider is the fact that Epson is actually the smallest of these companies. Mm-hmm. Canon is not used to be number two. And HP is the largest printer manufacturer in the world.
Right.
On one side, it is good that we now can choose, but on the other side, the selection process can be very complicated and confusing. We are soon in the same wars as in the camera world, Canon or Nikon. And you know from there, both are good, and it depends on what you do with these tools.
Yep.
If you really would objectively judge printers, you would then also need to bring raster imaging processes, or called RIPs, into the equation to get the very last bit of quality out of these printers. But this adds cost and also can complicate the whole printing process a lot. We are currently actually looking at some other RIPs. So very often it's the same with cameras. If people say this camera is not as good as the other camera, or this printer is not as good as the other printer, they don't really know the printer because they see it through a certain tool, driver, or whatever. So it may or in photography, you see it through a raw converter. So if you may change the tool, you may get better results than with the other printer you thought is better. So it is not the printers are now at a level where the way you work with them is kind of more important than the tools itself.
And that's where your book comes in handy. And I want to remind our listeners that the publisher is Rocky Nook. The book is entitled Fine Art Printing for Photographers, Exhibition Quality Prints with Inkjet Printers by Uwe Steinmüller and Jürgen Gulbens. The price in the United States is $45. A couple of wrap-up questions, please, Uwe. Is there one printer? We've just primarily been thinking about color, but is there one that's better than the others as far as black and white results? Or does the same thing apply?
Kind of the same. Big development over the last 2 years. Two black inks are the minimum to get great results. Mm-hmm. 3 to 6 can be better. Today's top printers from HP, Canon, and Epson all have at least 3 blacks grays. This means all the big 3 can print first-rate black and white.
So the news is good regardless, as long as we're getting a top-quality printer from a top-quality company.
Right. But I want to get a little bit into the history. With ImagePrint RIP, the Epson Ultra Chrome inks, the version before K3, before the current generation, could produce excellent black and white prints with only 2 blacks. The new K3 inks get maybe slightly better black and white, but you get them also pretty good directly out of the driver. We personally now use the HP Z3100 mm-hmm. for printing black and white on matte fine art papers and love the results that we could get as good results with the other two.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. Now, are we going to be able to see your smiling face at Macworld in a couple of weeks? Are you going to be there?
Likely, yes. I probably will be there, maybe even for 2 days, working with one company. But it's not finally planned.
Okay. Well, let's make sure that we find out so our listeners and readers of MyMac.com and the BookBytes Live podcast are aware of where they can see you in person if they'd like to get their copy of Fine Art Printing for Photographers autographed. Now, finally, can you please tell us the personal URL, the website, so we can learn more about you and your professional work?
Yeah, there are different URLs, but the first most important in this kind of the centerpiece is outbackphoto.com, like the Australian Outback.
Outbackphoto, like all one word, .com.
Yes. And Outback stands for the outdoors. So it started as being a premier site for, of course it didn't start as a premier site, but it started as a site for fine art outdoor photography.
Okay.
Today I consider it a site about fine art photography. And we talk about cameras, printers, workflow, pictures, you name it. So it's nearly every day or at least every second day we have new news items. And we had last year about 5 million visitors to that site.
Outbackphoto.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the MyMac.com Book Bites Live podcast. We want to meet you in person. We want to congratulate you on this outstanding book. And we want to give you a very high rating of 4.5 out of 5. There's always room for improvement. So that's an excellent rating, and we congratulate you and Jürgen on this outstanding book, and we do want to recommend this highly to our readers and listeners.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.